Oh, hi, Kate.
Nobody does it better. Nobody does it like my half as good as you. It wouldn't be a song unless I messed up the lyrics.
Yes, it's accurate.
Baby, you're the best. So I moved my house plants out onto my deck to take them on a little field trip to get some sunshine. Because if I kill a fucking plant this week, that's it. I give up. They feel like a metaphor for my ability to exist in the world. My plants are like this extension of how I operate self-care.
Uh-huh. And how are they doing?
They're doing great. Okay. They are. I am desperately in need of a shower and good flossing, but the plants are okay. It's like self-care by proxy. That makes sense?
Total sense.
Shout out to our sponsor. What's the name of it? It's the underwear you can bleed into.
Oh.
Anyway, shout out to them. It's nice not having to buy tampons and pads in a quarantine.
That's fair. That's fair.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live where they were talking? It was like all the big shit female comedians wearing pads from the 1950s, and they were like, "Let's go back old school."
No, I didn't see this.
It's brilliant. They're like everything vintage is cool again. And then it's basically like the old pads that went up to your belly button, down and around up to your ass crack, and then had a belt above it. And they were like, "It's so complicated." Yeah, I'll send you the link. It made my day. But yeah, we really are slowly, like, you're seeing more people plant gardens and victory gardens. People, like, DIY has been, you know, the volume on that has been turned way up because, you know, people are, like, realizing that the animals are so happy that we are staying out of their way. And there's sort of this return to, like, a pseudo-romantic essentialism of being closer to the earth. And, you know, it's all being marketed to us quietly too.
That's also very true.
Yeah, like have your own compost. Now's the time to learn how to compost, folks. Like that's sort of the message.
Yeah.
Not only do you drive, you better learn how to fucking put up, start canning.
Yeah.
Learn how to can.
I've done none of that. Of course, I have no where to put said garden.
Okay, yeah, you do. You should see, like, I have shit. Just be a hoarder. It's easy. Just like nail it to the wall.
That's your answer to everything.
It is, and it's worked out really great. I'm really happy with my choices, Ryan. So I adopted a fish. Frankie named him Rainbow Fish. He's still alive, which is good. I adopted a cat, which I've seen like thrice because it was a wild cat. And I feel like I should just let him go. Like he's not chipped. I think he'd be way happier outside. But here he is. He comes out at night to eat and I'm working with him, Thomas. And I will, you know, I don't think this cat is ever going to like me. And so that is also like self-care by proxy is like living alongside someone that like quietly hates you. Figure out how to navigate that. Again, and then and then I adopted a dog because, you know, livestock, and this dog is I hit the jackpot, man. He was a stray somewhere in Texas wandering around all skinny, and I think kids were hitting him with sticks.
Oh.
That's the story I tell myself. It's probably a puppy mill, but I say all this because there's something really satisfying about putting other needs outside of yourself externalized, like having to consistently take care of things around you. For those of you that have ever struggled with severe depression or anxiety or PTSD, it can be really hard to take care of yourself sometimes. Like, just the mechanisms in place in your brain to motivate you to, like, be worthy of brushing your teeth or whatever it is, getting out of bed, all of that. I have found that in my process, living with that and evolving with that, that, you know, having plants and fish and I don't count my daughter in this because it's just like a different bracket. Yeah. But like my animals and stuff, especially for the days I don't have Frankie with me, it's like a really sweet way to stay out of my own bullshit. Mm-hmm. And to stay like in a different, larger space outside of myself. And I'm not implying in any way that depression and anxiety is a pathological form of self-centeredness, not at all. I'm just saying that there's a gravitational pull to it, that when you know someone else or something else's or other being his ability to survive is dependent on you, it's easier to do what needs done, getting done. Mm-hmm. Than it can be when you yourself need those same things. And so the hope is that by setting those things in place, you can then apply the same techniques to yourself. All of this is to say, my friends with depression and anxiety and PTSD and anything else like that, go get a fucking plant. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, they call it like, there's sort of some steps to it. There's actual, not 12 steps, but there's some colloquialisms around this. And it's, when you get sober, get a plant. And if you can keep that plant alive for a year, get a pet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they also say you're not really allowed to be in a relationship until you've been sober for a year and you've kept the plant alive, and then you can be in a relationship. You can start dating. But the plant is like the primary mover.
Yeah.
Like, keep that plant alive for a year and then you can have a pet. Keep that pet alive for a year and then you can add on. And there's things about that I don't like the timeline of it.
Yeah.
I'm sort of a let's get the whole barn and just see. But yes, me and my buddy are about to because we could eat them, maybe, if they're not doing well. Chickens. We're going to get some chickens.
Oh, lovely.
So that's where my head's at.
So you're essentially just going to eventually buy a farm and...
No, I'm really interested in not farm life, but mini farm. Uh-huh. Mini farm in a place where I am still in contact with the city.
Yeah.
And the ocean. And like right now, the place that I'm in Rhode Island, I don't need acres and acres and acres because I got other work to do in my life. But I like the idea of, with the amount of land we have, like using some of it to grow our own food and kill our own birds. We're not going to kill them. We're going to eat their ovum.
Well, this has started off well. Yeah.
So long story short, start with I'm going to send you a hermit crab.
You're going to send me a hermit crab?
And we'll name him Bastion.
Or are you going to send everybody a hermit crab that listens to this podcast?
Just you.
Okay.
And you get a hermit crab. So how are you doing?
Oh, that's such a complicated question. That's such a complicated question. I'm doing okay. Which is a loaded phrase. Okay, meaning that there are moments of like almost thriving, and then there are moments of severe depression and anxiety, and every color of the rainbow in between. And It's it's very hard to navigate. It's hard to tell what, if anything specific, is triggering those states of mind, those swings of the pendulum. And it's this really interesting moment of having certainly some helpful tools and practices and ideas that I have accumulated over the years to help me through this, but then also for many reasons, way more than just the pandemic, this is as they say, unprecedented. And sometimes I'm just like, I have no fucking clue how to work with this. And then having to sit with that is interesting.
It's like there's part of us that is living it and part of us that is watching how we're living it.
Yeah.
And like, could this be optimized? If I were to look back and create a guidebook for how to navigate life in a pandemic, would this be a chapter? I love, in a way, though, all the people that are like, you know what, I'm just going to go gray. And I love the people that are like, you know what, now is the time to grow full body hair and give myself permission. Like, I encourage that for those of you that are fighting nature. Let it go. Like, I think there might be an interesting portion of the population, a not insignificant portion of the population, that makes decisions about their personal aesthetics.
Yeah.
Based on this period of time where there was no access to the services, you know.
Yeah.
Of, you know, hair and hair dye and nails and waxing and all that shit.
Yeah.
Which to me, not that I'm wishing those industries suffer, although I don't know. I think that might be kind of a beautiful thing. I think some people are going to go running right back to the way things were.
Yeah.
Just a step back to a larger conversation. Just get me right back to exactly where we were. Where's the bookmark? How do I?
Yeah.
And then I think there's that percentage of the population that is like, yeah, I didn't need this and this and this, and I'm going to continue to live free of those things.
Yeah.
Do you have anything like that?
Anything that I'm like,
yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore.
No, but I think part of the, so many of the things that you just mentioned are like distinctly gendered one way or another. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it very complicated for me to say like, oh, well, I don't need to do this or I don't need to do that. And then have the internal conversation of like, okay, but like how much of that is, and this is always the conversation with any sort of let's say things that we do to our bodies to forecast or not forecast to mark a certain spot on the gender spectrum, is,
that's a good way of saying it,
that those things are not inherently gendered necessarily. They're gendered if from a cultural viewpoint, but you know, from an intellectual viewpoint, if I really like sit with it long enough, like, no, they aren't. And some of those things are and feel affirming to me and to many other people in a way that alleviates a certain amount of suffering. So there are things that, like, I do look forward to, you know, something as simple as like going and getting my nails done, because I absolutely suck at doing them myself. But I'm also keenly aware of how much of that is like how much of that is conditioned into us.
And I know, it's so much as like, is this performing gender, or is this like, and it, we're all performing gender, like,
yeah. And that makes things very, very, very complicated for me in terms of all of that. And it's another place where I just come back to like, I have no fucking clue. Like, I have no fucking clue. And I know my internal experience of my own body and my own gender and my own self, and my own non-self, all of those things that you mentioned in terms of how people manage their body hair, how people cut their hair, which is like actually the biggest marker, I think that people read one's gender from, and all of that, how you dress, how you like, it's all very
it's context specific.
Yes. And I would never want to say, and this is something that I have to be very careful that I watch my own internal dialogue on, because sometimes I will like negate like really simple things that would be more affirming, because I think that I should be on some like elevated plane having practiced for as long as I have, and then having to be like, that's fucking stupid, like
just like degrees of femness.
Yeah. And then,
okay,
and then for like, and then I think for anybody who maybe identifies more like I do and was assigned male at birth, there's also the like, there's also like the subtle like misogyny in the back of my brain that's like like that probably prevented me from leaning into the complex world of my own gender when I was younger. And so it all is this like big mess of conditions that we've all had, you know, hammered into our brain and psyche, and
oh, Ryan, that's fascinating. I guess my like big picture wish for everybody across the board, applied differently but thematically the same, is that we all feel less required to do things that don't bring us joy.
Yes, that's
so it. For like, if it brings you joy, yeah, you know, have fun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
If it affirms, if it's a way to celebrate life and you look forward to it, but if it feels like this thing you have to do to be loved and beautiful,
yes,
and fuckable and keepable, if it feels like you have to do this in order to get a ticket to attend,
yes,
theater of your own life. Those are the things that I wish we had more peace from.
Yes.
So for me, you know, a lot of it had to do and continues to have to do with weight. Like, I'm not lovable or sexy if I don't have A, B, and C. And then body hair is like, well, if I have leg hair, if I don't do X, Y, and Z in a very specific way, I'm not lovable. And like, armpit hair. Oh, if I teach and my arms go up and I'm wearing a tank top, that's, you know, that's challenging for people, you know? So it's like, I'm trying personally, to say that I am lovable and I'm allowed to be on this planet, as I am. And if I do get my nails done and hair done, it's because I want to. It's because it feels good.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point I'm getting at, is anything that feels like this is the price of admission.
Yes. Yes.
Is what I want to strip back.
And that's what I'm always like trying to, like, it's a very like thin edge. Of like,
because what, is that a joy? Like, is the joy you're feeling a joy of admission?
Yes.
Joy of like, oh, it feels nice to have a massage, and I love the color, and it's like time for me to decompress.
Yes. It is a very difficult thing to. It is a very difficult thing for me to parse out. And
but here's the time to do it,
because
when it's withheld, you have to sit with the sensation of, do I just miss that, or is there an element of shame underneath of not having it done? Like, you know, and there's a lot of folks out there whose hair is going gray, and I talked to my mother about this, and she has I think my mother is just such a beautiful woman, and she has dark hair, and she's letting it go white, and it's like this beautiful white. But she's had dark hair as long as I can remember, and it looks natural. She's one of those people that has dyed her hair, and maybe you couldn't tell.
Yeah.
So she is like struggling with this moment, like watching her just be like, "Okay, I'm gonna do it. Now's the time." It's like a big fucking deal. You know, I think on for people to navigate that. And I'm sure that there are other situations that we're completely blind to. I would think that for people of color that don't have access to hair the way they normally do it right now might be in another moment of reflection around that, like cultural things that I am like myopic to that people are navigating right now are sorry, that was Frankie. How did we get on this subject?
I don't know how we got on this subject. But yeah, I think the other This is something that's like hard to articulate. The other like I would imagine some people hearing us talk about what they might consider as like superficial stuff, sort of like balk of like, oh, well, I don't need it. It's like, if you haven't done the exercise of really looking at how you perform yourself, and you know, as I continue to unpack that, there are some parts of that where I'm like, it's not that that there are some aspects that are performed that I dislike. It's just that I get to be like, okay, well, where did the need to perform in that way come from? Like, what situations arose in my life that make me feel like I have to behave a certain way. And that cuts across whiteness, that cuts across gender, that cuts across, whatever subgroup someone might identify with within sexuality or within, you know, life in general. It cuts across political boundaries. It cuts across like class boundaries. It cuts across how we were brought up to interact with school and education, and to cut, like, it, the, you start pulling at these threads and it's just like, oh fuck, like, who the hell am I? And you know coming to having these glimpses, it's not like you come, it's not that I've ever like come to a realization that has like sustained. It's just like you get a glimpse of like, oh, like the self is all of those things put together, and it's also like underneath all of those things, like both things are operating at the same time. And it's not that there's like this search for, you know, one like essential self, as in my mind, as some philosophies would point to. It's how do I become aware of all of this baggage, begin to understand it, and then try to take all of that information and just try to, I mean, for lack of a better word, live well. And
push the culture forward.
Yeah, and then engage with, you know, whatever one feels like one's sort of purpose in a relative sense is. But it is a really, really potent time to pull at some of those strings, and really, really take a look to the degree to which that feels safe and feels doable to someone. Because some days it doesn't. It's just like, let me put that in a box and put it on the shelf and come back to it later. But some days when it does feel useful to kind of tug on that string, it's a very potent time to begin to,
right? Yes.
Unravel those things. And sometimes, especially when I'm being asked to like do more shit, like in a productivity sense, there's like a resentment, because there's like, I know that there's like, if there wasn't this online format and we were all furloughed, that I could spend enough time on the mat and spend enough time on the cushion to I just want to be careful, it doesn't sound like a doing. It's not really a doing, it's just you're to reflect on that.
Are you saying that yoga teachers aren't essential workers?
They are not essential workers. They are absolutely not essential workers. And the memes that are popping up about yoga and yoga teachers being essential, I think are really misguided. Yoga teachers are helpful, can be helpful. But I think part of the reason why people are feeling that they are so helpful and necessary is because we haven't been doing our jobs, because we've been teaching people, the whole industry is set up to teach what's popular, not what's helpful, because it's got to be a business that grows. You're muted.
So then why does it feel helpful now?
Because the relief is more palpable, I think.
So then connect the dots for me. I'm feeling a little slow. How does that mean that yoga teachers haven't been doing their job if what we're doing now just feels
we have said time and time again that part of our job is to teach ourselves out of a job.
Hell yes.
And
We haven't done that.
We haven't done that successfully.
Got it.
Which is why people are so reliant on these platforms. Now, if there's like a really, because I've done this a couple of times over the course of the quarantine, where I'm just like, you know, I want to be in a space, albeit virtual, and listen to this person that I trust and want to be in the presence of, teach asana class, or teach a meditation class, or teach or lead a Dharma talk, which is slightly different than, very different than those two things, but you get what I'm saying. And I just want to have that experience, because it's a comforting experience. And I think there is 100% nothing wrong with that. But I do feel that, and this was happening before the quarantine. It's like we've boxed ourselves in. We have to keep creating more and more growth in order to continue to make money. And the only way we see to do that is by having busier and busier and busier classes to get more and more and more and more people. And then do teacher trainings. And we're still boxed into that, even in the state of quarantine.
Grow, 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 more, more, more. Go west, young man, go west. I'm going to put a silver lining on that. Yes, I agree. We are perpetuating the system that got us here. My hope is the teachers are changing how they teach a little bit and maybe slowing down. I can't imagine people are doing the same speed of class. I'm hoping that there's more time for reflection and stillness and softness, even in power classes, because teachers can't sustain that.
Yeah.
Unless they're just sitting there like, you know, drill sergeant style. And I wonder if some of the growth isn't growth in a new direction. Like I'm looking at, you know, the Yoga Nidra Wednesday night thing I'm doing, and how that feels very, although I see what you're saying, you know, I'm still remunerated based on.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, attendance.
As are, you know, most folks across the industry, there is usually some attendance-based pay that comes into the picture. But I think I really think that most of it is a sense of, or most of it is an issue with scale. Because I, you know, and I'm not saying we can ever really go back to this, but, you know, thinking back to having like one yoga class a week that you could go to, and probably in some places, you know, absent this digital format, that's still the case. And there was a sense of, okay, I'm going to learn some stuff and then we'll go practice on my own. Or I'm, you know, even in the case of something like Ashtanga, where there's still a self-led, which I talked to an Ashtanga teacher the other day, and he said that people were still showing up online for Mysore practice, which I thought was spectacular. Yeah, yeah.
If you could, what? Yeah, that would be like, hey Ryan, I showed up for the home practice. It's like, this is not a drill, people. Go ahead, do it on your no.
Yeah.
But it is filling the thing about the live online classes is it's filling the hunger for fucking community, for the love of God.
Sure, so I agree with that wholeheartedly, but then I just want to be clear that like, it's like what Leslie Kaminoff will often say about like instructor versus teacher. It's like, if when I'm put into a situation where my job is to have as many people attend as humanly possible, or to leverage my following, which is a phrase that makes me cringe, then I feel like I'm like a salesperson, and I'm just like leading, I'm just like an aerobics teacher, even if I'm sitting down on a cushion and teaching meditation. Funny thing is, a lot of fitness instructors don't get paid the way that yoga instructors do. They just get a much higher flat rate than...
Who do? Aerobics instructors?
No, like a lot of other fitness instructors don't necessarily get paid on this scale of like, you need to have 50 people in the room. Partially that's limited by equipment. Partially that's limited by the spaces in which they're operating. It's just that the yoga world is kind of stuck on this low tier, which is both a function of class prices not really keeping pace, and a function of just more and more and more and more yoga studios are like, no one studio has the like market on a city. It honestly used to be like, there used to be in most major cities like 1, 2, maybe 3 major studios, and people had their studio and they just went there. Maybe they dropped in at other studios once in a while, but that's what they did. I just think I just reflect more and more, like, the thing that I am interested in is teaching, and more the expectation is just to be led through a positive experience, which is not to negate that having a positive experience is bad, that's not the whole point.
What is the whole point?
It's more than that. It's learning something. It's you know, practicing in such a way that you do bump up against some of those rough edges, otherwise it can quickly become just like pure escapism, which, you know, escapism now and again is perfectly fine and wonderful, but if that's all the yoga quote unquote that someone's practicing, I
feel like part of what happens is when a teacher gets up in front of the room and teaches in a way that commands a very particular kind of authority, like a somatic authority.
Uh-huh.
That is about alignment and effort.
Yeah.
And like power and
engage this, engage that.
Yeah. It works well for job security.
Mm-hmm.
To teach that way, because how dare you do this on your own? You're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you the right way to do it. That is really the, I think Oh my God, I think I just realized when people teach that way, and a lot of people do, it does not encourage confidence in the student's ability to practice on their own. Yes. And I'm not saying, and this is what I hate, like when I say things like that, the pushback I get is, well, so what, are we just gonna like wiggle around free flow in a room and call it yoga? And it's like, well, maybe A, but B,
there are situations where that is possible.
There's a freaking middle ground, and I'm suggesting the middle ground. So I think I get a lot from people who think I'm saying an extreme thing when really what I'm saying is, hey, can we just take it down a tick? And I think sometimes that's because of how I present my idea. They're like, oh, this must be a radical leftist thing. And it's not really. I just am of the belief that you have to, in at least 50% of your class, present multiple fucking choice.
Yeah. Not because all of the choices, because they'll get completely
You have to imply a conscious branching with what you're teaching. Here are possibilities, not all of them.
Yes.
How might this be? And it might be that you present two possibilities. It might be that you present the possibility of opting out. It might be that you just present the possibility of what can be done within this choice. Like, but the fact of the matter is presenting choices.
Yes.
Is the heart of what equips people to have the confidence to do this shit on their own. And if you really care about them in times of crisis, you will have done that.
Yeah.
And like for me, from my perspective, from a recovery perspective, priority number one is trust that you know enough to do this on your own.
Yeah.
You've got the ticket to entry. You've got it.
Yes.
You know?
And there's also a difference between the a person who is wanting to learn the intricacies of the asana from a point of view of just this like sort of genuine open curiosity, and you know,
yes,
and then from this point of view of, I have to remember to recall all of these specific muscular instructions in order to do the pose right. When in reality, like, I just don't think that that's how our brain works, at least not initially. Like, if you're lying down on the floor and someone says, engage your glutes and hamstrings to lift your legs. That to me is the opposite order of operations. It's like, lift your legs off the ground and feel that there's musculature that engaged to do that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Now, then you can put your legs back down on the floor and maybe engage that musculature in a different way because you already have a very clear somatic memory of what it means to engage those muscles. But, you know, when we get too into the intricacies of quote unquote alignment, and Lord knows I've done that to people, it actually kind of misses the point, because there sometimes it's just if we really just take it back to a sort of more classical understanding of yoga or Buddhism, pointing out that there's some sort of generalized avidya that is causing suffering, some sort of lack of seeing clearly. Well, then the first thing is we just need to develop the awareness to feel, which is different than figuring out how to do Hanumanasana and grab the leg behind you.
Oof. But if I can't grab the leg behind me, I haven't done the work. Ryan.
You have not done the work. It's true.
I haven't done the work. And also intellectually and spiritually, I must be a little bit restricted because my thoughts and my spirit really open up when my body does.
Because you, Kate.
I'm just waiting.
Yeah. Because you, Kate, are not your body. So if you really believe that enough, then your hamstrings would just magically adjust and your pelvis would become a different pelvis and you'd be able to sit down on the floor in Hanumanasana.
Ryan, practice and all is coming. That Hanumanasana is definitely gonna like re-suture up my hip. And
you know, that was the topic of the very, very first Unrolled.
Was it?
Was Hanumanasana
all is coming? Was it? Oh, that's right. Ooh, but remember, I'm flexible because I'm fat, Ryan. Remember that one?
Oh yes.
Jesus Christ. All fat people are flexible.
Yes.
They didn't work towards it. It's just because there's so much weight on their ligaments that it really stretches them out. If you're just tuning in and you think I'm fat hating right now, I need you to know I'm being completely sarcastic. I'm also a big girl that has been told.
Because people just like randomly scroll to the middle of the episode and press go.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just making sure.
No, I have. And the sound of my own voice feels like warm yogurt being poured in my ear. It's not pleasant. But here we are.
Here we are.
I feel like there was something else really important that you texted me as a topic that we didn't beat over the head yet. Yoga teachers aren't essential. We just haven't been doing our jobs. I think we got that.
Yeah, I think we cleared that one up real fast.
And, you know, all of this is to say, like, I think there's value in teachers teaching.
Yeah.
You know, with a commanding presence and saying what they believe. But I think it becomes dangerous when it's not full of choices and a little bit of questioning. I think that's when it becomes dogmatic.
And
trust your students to be adults and trust the intelligence of your students. I still think yoga teachers do not trust that their students are smarter than them.
Yes.
I know for damn sure that the people coming to my class are like,
yes,
could kick my ass up and down the street intellectually.
Yes.
Or in their fields of work. These are, you know, like, it's, I don't know when the message went out to infantilize students.
Yeah.
And I think it's because a lot of yoga teachers, I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to say it. A lot of yoga teachers are just dopes. They're in this because, oh God, that was such a hateful thing to say. There's an anti-intellectual streak in this country that is loud.
Yeah.
We don't like thinkers. We don't like questioners. Yeah. We don't like that. It makes us very uncomfortable. It feels confrontational.
Yeah.
And that's threatening.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not inherently that. It's a love and engagement.
The question to me always is like, what's the actual scope of the inquiry that you're trying to guide people through? And and in a
I just dropped a clot. I laughed so hard.
What?
Nothing. Go on. Okay. It's fine.
And so if I'm working with people who are very unfamiliar with yoga practice, I can still give choice, but it's going to be a narrower range of choices than if I had a group of people that I've worked with for years and trust them to be able to work with the basics of the basic actions within a particular posture. And then the inquiry, just the scope of the inquiry changes. And I think sometimes and this was very much a part of my training, is like, it, in a negative way, was that there was this like infantilizing of beginners. And the conversation that I think the way that I frame that conversation in my head is just this ability to know and be compassionate for the fact that, like, when I was starting to practice yoga, I was incredibly disconnected from my body. It wasn't that I wasn't intelligent. It's just that no one had asked me to externally or internally rotate my arm before. There was no education about how my body moves and how to relate to my body. There was some sort of blind directive to do some sort of athletic endeavor or you're lazy. But that was like my whole relationship with doing anything physical, was that sort of, if you're not doing a sport, then you're just a lazy person as a kid. And so there were moments early on where I was like, I have no fucking clue what I'm doing. But by no means did I have teachers that like taught in a way that I felt like I was dumb. It was just like, oh, this is new information. And I think where people sometimes feel like there isn't a middle ground between these extremes of like everything has to be taught in this very sort of like rigid methodological way and, you know, do whatever the hell you want, is a couple things. Is one, just the way that we're forced to deliver yoga, for better or for worse, in a sort of larger group context. It is an easy way,
genius,
to get people all doing the same thing at once. Not saying that that's the ideal, but that's kind of where the whole thing is coming from, in terms of the way that we train teachers. And
I had a student say something similar, because they ended up,
it takes a while for someone
taking like a power class I taught, and they were like
confident enough that they can
rolling around on the ground
deliver.
Like, yes, you came to a power class,
the practice in a way that gives people choice to express it in their
own. It's great. You knew that was what you needed.
Their own way. And I, you know, to the credit of this online forum, I actually see people taking much more agency with that.
As if this,
but then
is,
I also get messages from people saying, I'm sorry that I wasn't doing the thing that you were saying to do, because I have to be like,
compound complex.
I saw what you were doing and it was absolutely on point.
I try to remind myself,
given what I know about the, like, whatever particular issue was going on in that person's body, it was like, wow, what a brilliant way to feel exactly what I was asking.
You don't have to leave it all on the mat, you know. And like sometimes we play with the opposite thing, where I say, what if this was? How would you enjoy it? How would you experience it if you knew it was your last? Like, I mean, those are two different things, but. You know, just in general, like I am so eye-rollingly suspicious of the confident teacher that offers a very specific one way to do it without saying, this is a way I have found useful. Today we're going to try it. And like a recognition that it's like in your body.
You don't have to give it all today.
A concept, huh?
Yes. I think it is helpful to do it this way for this purpose. Yes. But see, but here's the thing, that what's interesting to me about the couple of interactions like that that I've had where someone veers off and then they email me and be like, sorry, I was veering off. I had XYZ going on. It is very clear to me that in those conversations, those students understand that the pose we're doing is just happened to be the pose that I chose in order to illustrate a particular concept, but it's not the only pose that could illustrate or help to feel that concept. So it's very clear that, you know, in one example, someone couldn't lie on their side to do whatever we were doing to feel the side ribs and armpit. And so they just lied on their back and figured out a way by maneuvering their legs and their arm to get the same focal point, but in a way that was supportive for them. Like, that's a really easy example. It's like, no, lying in Anantasana was not the point. Feeling a particular set of actions, feeling a particular set of tissues was the point. And so there's any number of ways to do that. Lying down, standing up, sitting down.
Just yoga teachers, we're not doing our job.
From dog pose and, or any sort of all fours.
The good news is it's shown a light on that.
And so it...
But also on our while deep longing the
sort of
for...
apologetic nature of some of those
times of being with other
emails
people.
That I've gotten makes like me a little sad. The fact really that they're they understand that the purpose that they were still able to get the point of the exploration.
I don't know. I'm one of those people, and I think a lot of folks
made me quite
will recognize this to simultaneously,
which is why I didn't correct them.
Love humanity
on the Zoom call.
And to
because I was like, oh, that's
just like,
that's great.
Burn it all down. Like nothing in between. You know, like I care so much about a lot of
people.
I don't
know how I got here.
And people, that's why I teach publicly. You know, and then, but yet there's this other side of me that is just like so fed up.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is all including
myself.
Anyways. So any tips, any new tips before we shut this one down?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 Well, actually, before we wrap up, I just wanted to say that a number of folks reached out having heard the podcast that I did with Jay Brown around, you know, the first half was just sort of catching up, but the second half, I agreed to let Jay asked me a bunch of questions around gender and stuff and queerness in general. And it meant the world to me that so many folks reached out and found either the content helpful or just the tone of the conversation to be helpful. I have to say that I was really nervous having that conversation because so often those conversations can, you know, one person can be made the stand-in for a whole group of people who couldn't possibly share
I return to my previous point. Yoga teachers are dopes.
So I'm really, really happy to have heard from many of you. And also, you know, in those messages were also some reports of what goes on in a yoga classroom when someone is presenting in a gender nonconforming way, at least from the teacher's point of view, or saying their pronouns, or whatever it is, and how people still how teachers in the yoga community are not really doing their best to hold space for that, and sometimes just being outright mean. And I don't know. Yes. Yeah. And I don't know how to,
which is generous. You're like, hey, I'm going to take on the onus of educating you. That's about it.
But I mean, quasi-public way, meaning whoever listens to our podcast and whoever listens to Jay's podcast, and but I will say that, like, if you are a teacher and you have questions about either how to support or understand queer folks and trans folks and I'm happy to have those conversations with people in a way that is as kind as I can muster. You know, I mean, and obviously if I don't have the space for it, I won't, you know, do it. But I do, so much of the way, especially people who've been teaching as long or longer than I have, so much of the way that we were taught yoga and the philosophical underpinnings of it can't hold this conversation. Like, it just is not equipped to hold this conversation. And so, just like it's not really equipped to hold conversations around race, and it's not really equipped to hold conversations around class, especially if the philosophy that you're ascribing to comes from a caste system, that's really problematic. So, you know, we have to do some work around applying what we know and experience about yoga to our sort of modern world and our modern understanding of all of these different layers of being. And, you know, I'm happy to have those conversations with folks, because what I don't want is someone who's never done yoga before and they go into a yoga classroom, or maybe they have done yoga and they step into their yoga teacher training and they get made fun of for their pronouns explicitly or implicitly. And then that sort of throws them off from either being a teacher or just starting a practice that has been really helpful specifically to me in understanding my own gender and my own existence. And but
willful ignorance, you know, also is malicious.
And I don't think I really said this to so Jay. It's like, it's not like I relied on the Bhagavad Gita to figure out
the opposite.
This stuff. It, like, I had to apply other understandings and other writers and other philosophies and integrate them into how I was practicing. And so I just want to thank everybody who reached out and said kind things. I'm sure there are other people who have unkind things to say. I don't really want to hear from you, but if you have constructive criticism, I'm always open to that. and that I'm happy to have that conversation with folks, especially with teachers who may not be what's the word I'm looking for? Especially with folks who may be coming at it from just a simple not understanding. That it, you know, they're not
nobody did
trying to be actively better. Mean towards a particular person.
Nobody but, does it, you know, like they, my baby does.
Yeah.
That's not the words. Baby, you're yes. the best.
But if they reach out, I don't think that that's necessarily willful ignorance. Like it's being active and trying to understand, and right. as best I can, as being only one human being who experiences
like a dog chasing its own tail, the way snake that I seeking myself, its own tail, a never ending cycle of thematic.
Explain things.
I got nothing. I just can't stop looking at my double chins when I do that.
Always with the caveat that I can't speak for all humans. So I just wanted to say that because it was nice to receive so many notes about that particular episode, and which I was very nervous about having come out. So. Oh, she brought it all the way back around. I did. It was good. It's rare that we loop back around to the start. Okay. Okay. Bye.